Hello, James, and thank you very much for taking part in this interview. You have been practicing Dzogchen for 60 years and teaching it for 40 years, and you have published many books on the subject and have translated and commented on many texts of this tradition. And my first question is, can you tell us about your background and what led you to practice and teach Dzogchen and Buddhism?
Oh, okay. Thank you for this interview. It's an interesting opportunity. My background is I'm Scottish. I grew up there, went to university there. I studied social anthropology and Indian philosophy. And in the summer holidays, I always hitchhiked to India, which was very possible at that time, could go very quickly. And arriving in India, I was very surprised by the softness of the whole Indian approach to life. Although the people could be poor and life could be very hard, there was a delicacy there which I didn't find in the West or in the Middle Eastern countries. And so I became more and more interested in Hinduism and in Buddhism. And then I went to India and stayed a long time, studying Tibetan language and studying with different Tibetan masters, learning different things. Always with this question is, what is the mind? What does it mean to be alive? Where are human beings situated in the world? So the Tibetan view is very different from that of Christianity, that God has made everything and has kind of placed human beings on the top of the pyramid, looking down on everything else. There, the human realm is embedded in this cycle, which is turning with God realms and jealous gods, humans, animals, hungry ghosts, and then the hell realms. And you can move around and around in these realms, but no matter where you are, it's difficult to find the exit. And from that Buddhist point of view, to have a human birth gives you the optimal chance of finding the exit from this wheel of life. And the wheel continues because of the impetus that we develop in ourselves. So we know what it's like to have a desire to get a good coffee or a nice wine, and then you look at the label on the bottle and think, oh, I need to get this one again. So already we are projecting into the future and thinking, I want more of this, I want less of that. And this mobilization in a linear direction develops a momentum, which, when it's mixed with our ethical turn in terms of aversion and desire, develops what's known as karma. And karma is simply the energetic charge that comes from a strongly dualistic participation in a situation. And we tend to be in our ego self, we tend to be governed by the thought of, I want to win, me first, I need, I'm entitled. And these kind of blinkered thoughts keep us running and running and trying to get, as if somehow joy was something you could consume. But as we know from eating ice cream, as you consume it, it vanishes. And pleasure is like that as well. As soon as you get your hand on it, it's kind of falling through your fingers. So when you're young, you're very energetic and you have all kind of experiences. And gradually I saw that chasing experiences was just very exhausting and didn't lead anywhere. And so I started to look at the mind. And Dzogchen is a tradition in the particularly in the Nyingma sect or tradition of Tibetan Buddhism, where the focus is on directly exploring your own mind. And so you start by focusing on the content of the mind. You calm the mind so that you can develop a focused attention, and then you observe the various tendencies which arise, and you feel the pull to mesh with them, to get engaged, and then you're blown hither and thither, and gradually you learn to stay calm in the presence of these hooks, which would otherwise be pulling you into habitual patterns. And when you are no longer led like a bull with a ring through its nose, you can stay calm in the face of inner habits and patterns that you might feel ashamed of or very desireful for. And you see, oh, I don't need to catch that thought. Because the more you observe your thoughts, feelings, sensations, you see they arise and they pass. They arise and they pass. They're actually ungraspable. They're very, very tricky and very deceptive. The thought seems to be something so real, so valid, and yet it's just dissolving like a wave coming out of the ocean and going back into it. And the more we see that, the thing, chasing thoughts is like chasing butterflies. So rather than looking out onto either the outer object or the inner object of experience, we start to look for the looker. Look and see who is the one who is looking. What is awareness itself? And then there are very subtle ways of becoming very open, aware of awareness itself, and then simply pure awareness. And that's the main focus of the path.
Is it possible for everyone to practice to realize this pure awareness and this to follow this path?
Yes, the awareness is the basis of our existence. What we have is our awareness, which is a bit shaded or cloudy. So what is actually occurring for us moment by moment is experience. And this experience arises as the interplay of self and other. So as I'm talking with you, I see your face on the little screen in front of me, but I also feel myself sitting here. My hands are moving, my body's moving. I feel the weight of my bum on the seat. So I am a flow of experience. And you, for me, are a flow of experience, and the room I'm sitting in is a flow of experience. So all of these waves or movements or ripples of experience are arising together. That is to say, awareness is the awareness of the situation within which the movement is occurring. Like in a theater, you have a stage, and on the stage you have dancers or singers or actors, and they're moving around and doing something, and they couldn't show themselves if the stage wasn't empty. The emptiness of the stage is the optimal creativity of life. But when you have a theater production, they bring in the background, we say props, the painted background, a table, a chair, a chaise longue, and so on. And then the actors are relating to these objects. The nature of the props, of the articles on the stage, limits the potential of the display. If you've got tables and chairs, then a ballet is more difficult to stage. Mm. Now, for a theater to function, these props should not be nailed to the ground. Because the most important thing is to be able to change the stage for different performances. But we, in our ego self, we nail ourselves to the ground. We say, I'm me, this is how I am, you know me, come on, you have to accept me as I am. And we become very fixed, which gives us a sense of security, but it's very limiting. It's very limiting. It's a costly kind of false security. Because actually, we are performative, participative. We, as we relate to other people, our posture, our gesture, our tone of voice changes. We manifest with the other. So the more we see that, is that however I am arising, this is not the truth of me. this is a display of the energy of the potential of the openness. And that potential, if it's really grounded in the openness, or as they say, the unborn, it's mm-hmm. something which is not fixed, the potential is unimpeded. And so we can play with many different people. If you visit friends and they have small children, you get down on the carpet and you play all kind of games with them, and then you talk to their grandmother, and your tone of voice is different, your posture, your vocabulary. We are situationally responsive as long as we can give ourselves into the interaction. It's when we hold ourselves in this separated I, me, myself position that we become diminished, and we also control other people. Because we are saying, if you want to be near me, you have to fit in with how I am.
And but is a practice necessary to realize this emptiness, to realize this interaction between the ego and the stage?
Yeah, we could call it practice. I mean, in fact, it's simply observing. It's simply observing without assuming, because most of the ideas we have about ourselves or the people we know are assumptions or ideas or templates that we build up through mind, through time. And so when we meet a friend, we already have an image of that friend operating inside us. And we talk through the lens of the image. And so our direct experience of our friend is muffled by what we know about them. So the main point of the practice is to become aware that thinking about is actually a cover-up, and simply seeing is much more direct and connective. Because usually we're bringing our knowledge, our personality, our ideas, our preferences into the picture. And so you could be talking with someone in a cafe, and actually you're talking to your idea of that person. And what you're doing is you're confirming to yourself that you know who they are, because you've limited the space for them to actually show you, hey, I'm different today. Something's happened in my life. And so the desire of the ego for stasis, for sameness, for predictability operates as a kind of muffler in or veil through which we are not in direct contact. So the main practice is simply to come into the senses and stay with the freshness of what is received without adding bits from the past to it. So we stay with the freshness and not mixing it up.
Okay, it seems like a very difficult practice for a beginner, for example. Do you use other practices than the one that you described, as maybe visualizations or mantras or or breath work?
That's possible. That's possible, of course. I mean, in a sense, you could say that Cézanne is spending so much time painting this one hillside in the south of France. And he's looking again and again, and each time he's looking, he sees something different. Mm-hmm. So his paintings, they're always the same and always different. But before he was able to paint, he had to learn the brushes, the oil paints, how to mix, and so on. So he brought an expertise to it. So the basic expertise that we would need is to be able to be a little bit calm, mm-hmm. so we can use focusing on the sensation of the breath at the nostrils, bringing our attention onto that moving point, and just staying with it. And then whenever we get distracted, we gather our attention and bring it back onto that point and bring it back onto that point until you can develop a stable attention. That's the basic tool. Because if you're always running after whatever exciting stimulus arises, you don't stay focused long enough to see that the field is changing. If the mind is moving, everything seems fixed. But when the mind becomes more calm, you see, oh, everything is moving. This is a dynamic world of unfolding. Mm. So that's the main preliminary that you need for this kind of practice. You can also do visualization and mantras, but it's not so necessary.
Okay. And I'm wondering if in your approach, there's a final goal, like awakening or enlightenment or liberation. Mm-hmm. And there's a starting point, and there's the end goal where one can say, oh, I'm liberated, or I'm a Buddha. And is it a kind of a feature that one can find in your approach?
There's not really any final point, because our life is our presence or awareness, which is a simple kind of being here-ness, like unwavering being here-ness. But what arises for this being here-ness is the ceaseless movement of experience. So the stillness is like the theater stage, and the movement of life is like all the different performances which arise on the stage. And these two are inseparable, because if you only had stillness, you might have some kind of insight and wisdom as to the nature of this infinitely calm and deep presence, but you would have no ability to respond. So Dzogchen is part of Mahayana Buddhism, where our concern is always to bring together the wisdom of emptiness, the ungraspable openness of the mind, and the flow of kindness and connectivity and participation, which allows us to be with people and do our best for them without getting caught up in the various neurotic patterns which arise.
Okay, and is there with the practice stage where the attachment of the ego, the fixation on the ego, is less pregnant, less strong? And yes. And what are the implications?
Well, in a sense, the ego is a lie, because the ego is a process, not a fixed state. It's a verb, it's not a noun. We are selfing moment by moment. We are emerging from our potential as a showing. Through our posture, gesture, tone of voice, the thoughts in our head, it's dynamic. So the lie of the ego is that I exist, I am me, I am a stable person. So this self-deception creates a lot of problems for us, because of course we are impacted by events in the world, we have hopes and fears, we feel expansive, we feel a bit frightened or ashamed. We are labile, we're moving with events, and yet the story we tell about ourselves is, this is who I am. So what we do with the practice is, when we have a strong formulation of identity, we start to see, what is this constituted from? What is the building block of our identity? And it's actually resting on moments of movement. This pattern, that pattern, that pattern, that pattern. There's nothing stable and fixed inside us. So the more we see that, the more we're not putting ourselves in the box of, this is who I am. We're actually in the tradition, they call it the signless. We're in a state where the signs and signifiers, the semiotic web that would nail down some pattern or formulation of who we are, this dissolves. And we see, oh, I am a participative unfolding. And this arises in my connectivity, my being a part of the world, not separate from the world, but I am enworlded. When you come out of your mother's body, you come into the world, and your mother's body was already in the world. So it's a new beginning for the baby, but it's actually a continuation of the energy of the world displaying itself. So the more we have a sense of I am is referring to a process and not to an entity. I am not a thing. I am a capacity for participation. Then the ego becomes thinned and thinned, and it's no longer our kind of home base or starting point.
So is it a way out of suffering?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, there's a famous formulation from the Buddha that there are mainly two kinds of suffering: getting what you don't want and not getting what you do want. And I think we can recognize that in our life very easily. So the key thing there is I do want and I don't want. I do want is desire. I don't want is kind of aversion leading to anger. And these two directions, these two vectors arise from here I am, this is me, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So I want more of what I like and I want less of what I don't like. And so freedom from this is to be able to find a way to participate in life, however it is.
Okay, you talk about participation in life, and I hear a little bit of I wonder if the place of ethics is essential in your teachings, because is it a practice that one has to do to participate in life, or is it a consequence of the practice that one can be ethical? I don't know if it's clear, but
yeah, I think so. I mean, ethics, you could say the basis of it, of ethics, is do no harm and if possible do some good. And the two main kinds of harm which arise in life is being invaded and being abandoned. So children can be invaded sexually or with violence or with rules and regulations which are unhelpful, but they can be abandoned if somebody never gives them a hug and doesn't listen to them when they want to tell their stories about school and so on. So the middle way, which is the heart of the Buddha Dharma, lies between invasion and abandonment. So to be ethical with others is, I don't want to invade you, I don't want to take you over and dominate you, and I don't want to abandon you. And similarly, I don't want you to invade me or abandon me, so that we meet on a kind of contact boundary in which, like two circles touching, both circles are intact, but also dynamically interweaving. So it takes us away from a kind of vertical hierarchy of dominating to dominated, controlling to controlled, and it's more a co-emergence, a participative inter-exchange, which is respectful of the other, but also offering to the other.
Are there, in your approach, contraindications or some people prevented to practice meditation, or in other words, can it be dangerous for some people?
I think if somebody is very has a habit of being of experiencing a lot of unbalanced moments, if they are very volatile, if they are ungrounded, because this is a practice about opening to space, to finding more space and not fixing a position, if psychologically there is a habit of instability from childhood experience, or and we would think of experiences in previous lives, it probably wouldn't be the first direction to go in. It would be important to come into the body through the senses, settled, here I am. So in a sense, first of all, an unstable person will need to separate to find their own integrity and then dissolve. So it's like if you are chaotic all over the place, you need to come into a simple duality, self and other. Here I am. You begin there. I begin here. So I don't invade you or get all over the place. And then move from duality to a dialogic interaction to then something more dynamic. And then gradually we see these pulsations of manifestation arise in the manner of a dream. But if you're very ungrounded, it's not going to work.
Okay. And for the beginner who wants to start with Dzogchen and wants to have a practice and wants to go far with this practice, what's the first step for him to start?
If you have a connection with some Buddhist group in France where people are doing this kind of practice, going along and seeing if it fits with you, that would be good. There are various places in France where people are doing this kind of practice, in the Dordogne in particular, that I know of. However, if you don't have a situation like that, the first thing is to be curious about yourself. And to one thing you could do is take a piece of paper and write down all your assumptions about yourself, which probably means things your parents told you, school teachers told you, lovers told you, and so on. You write all these down, and then you look at them and think, are they true? These are each little prisons or definitions. Do I fit inside? And the more you see how, oh, this morning I was very happy and then I got upset because someone at work said this and then I said that, and you see these waves, these pulsations of experience, and you're thinking, oh, I am like water, and these definitions people gave of me, they're like biscuit cutters, you know, a kind of shape made of metal, like a star or a half moon that you can put on the pastry to make different biscuits for children. So they are cutting me, but I'm not dough. I'm not something. I'm this movement. And the more you can see that, then you start to see the intrinsic freedom of our situation. Although people try to put us in a box, I don't fit in any box. And then we see, of course, all these horrors which are around in the world. You know, hatred on the basis of race or sexual orientation or religion or national history. And they're all resting on an overdetermined notion that I know the truth about you. I can define you. And when you see, oh, I have many aspects, many flavors, but no one definition can catch me. And you say, oh, I'm not a thing. And people, when they deal with each other as if they were fixed things, fixed entities. This is the basic violence of the human condition, in which the concept about a person is taken for the truth of their vital living existence. And that's a devious lie. That's a falsity.
And this beginner, how can he know if he's in front of the right teacher? If he wants to have a special bond with the teacher, and because it's his karma, or I don't know, but how can he be sure if the teacher is the one?
Well, you know, this is a kind of education. And the root of the word education, educare, means to lead out the potential of the student. Now, most education is not like that. It's more like being in a sausage factory, and the students come in like a little skin bag, and the teacher stuffing all kind of stuff into them. So you can become a Buddhist sausage. There's a lot of Buddhist teachings, and you can fill yourself up with them, but probably that's not very useful. So you want to have a teacher who can see you and relate to you and help you to shed your skin, to let go of all this burden that you've been carrying. So from your childhood and past lives, you have tendencies which restrict you and diminish your freedom. So that's like carrying a bag on your back, a rucksack full of stones. So the function of the teacher is to help you take the stones out of the bag and not put new ones in. I would think if that's happening, it's probably ethical and safe.
Okay. I have a last question. Can you lead us on a little guided meditation, if it's possible?
Okay, so you just sit in a relaxed way, and if possible, you want your skeleton to be carrying your weight. So the weight of your head is going down your spine. So your muscles are very relaxed. You can shake your arms and move your shoulders. You're not holding yourself together. You're just hanging on your skeleton. So the belly is open and relaxed, and the diaphragm is at ease. Because the central approach in Dzogchen is relaxation and ease. It's not about striving. It's not about the hero's journey. It's not about breaking through. It's about relaxing and opening. So usually for our practice, we do it with the eyes open. We don't want to go inside into a private world. So we sit with our gaze open and relax in the out-breath. So you could let out a long out-breath. And then you just sit. Nothing has changed. You're not trying to make anything artificial. Sensation of the body continues. What you see continues to be there, and you just stay with it. And if you stay relaxed and open, you start to see how your own thoughts and assumptions are constructing the field of your experience. That what you take to be the given of your body and what's present in the room is actually a process of interpretation. Your mind is moving because you're making judgments about how you're breathing, or you look at the wall and you think, oh, I better repaint it. It's looking very old and tired. Or you remember that you have to do something. And you see, oh, the mind is moving. The mind is moving. The mind can only move because of the space of the mind. All my memories, thoughts, plans are moving in the space of the mind. So stay with the space and allow the movement to move. Very, very simple. If you get tied up in thoughts or in emotion, relax into the out-breath. As you breathe out, release the tension, release the identification. Here I am, present in space, as space. And the more you sit with that, the more you see the dynamic movement of everything which seems a fixture of existence. And then you see, oh, this is all potential. And I can manifest in many different ways with many different people in order to bring light and truth and fulfillment to them. And then at the end of the practice, you stay with the sense of space and you get up and make a coffee or you telephone someone and try to have the sense of this is movement moving in space, moving in space. And if you like, what you can do is you can just walk directly towards the wall until you bang into the wall. And then you think, oh, it's true. I need space to move. I need space. And then you turn around into the space of the room, and then you are free to move. So although the ego wants to cling on and fix experience, actually our freedom arises from moving in space. And so we integrate that into everything we do in life without consolidating, without making it heavy and fixed. And then our life is more light, more connected, and more at ease.
Okay. Thank you. And can you tell us to end this interview, if you offer online courses or events online or not online?
Yes, well, we have many Zoom teachings. They are at the moment in English, but we have translation at the same time into Spanish, Portuguese, German, and Polish. So if somebody wants to translate into French, that would also be possible. But we have many resources available.
Okay. So I will put the links on the video descriptions.
Okay.
And thank you again for your time and teachings. And maybe we can meet another time for another discussion.
Okay. Pleasure. Bye for now.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.